Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Welcome, Morris. Morris Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Sahaka Amana L. Bay. And this evening, we have some outstanding information for you. We're going to be dealing with the Moors, economy, and survivalism, and what it's going to take, where we are, and what it's going to take to survive the coming economic collapse, to crash the dollar, and what's going to take place during that type of time period, how long this thing is going to last, and what must we do to get prepared for this thing. But before we get started, I'm going to go ahead and make some announcements here. We're offering our free articles to use the rule of 14th Amendment exposed as well as the commerce game. And the way to access is simply by contacting me at area code 904-303-9061. Before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I also want to mention the fact that we have created one of the most comprehensive libraries inside the United States. And this thing is tools. These are tools for actually going out, learning what you have to do, and to use what we provided for you to get the job done. And actually, in actuality, to solve the problems and situation that you got going in your life. And your culture is there, your story is there, history is there, how to deal with your mortgage companies are there, handling yourself in the courtroom is there, your rights to travel, your world citizen travel passport, all of that stuff is there, much, much, much more. I also want to mention that coming up January 11th to the 13th, we'll be hosting right here in Jacksonville, Florida. We're doing a summit for the Moors, and these are going to be workshops, and it's going to be on commercial enterprise, and we're encouraging everybody, if you're here living in this city, if you're in the state of Florida, you need to be here. We got Brother Diallo Sakura is going to be coming in a few. And he's going to give us some more information. But if you need to learn anything about it right away, you can call him at area code 904-446-8345. That's the coming summit of the Moors, where we'll put together workshops, and we'll be actually doing things right here in the city of Jacksonville. So make sure you contact Brother Diallo Secure at area code 904-446-8345. And that's, of course, Eastern Standard Time. We're going to be dealing with the also, before I go any further, the way to access that library that I spoke of is simply by contacting me at area code 904-303-9061. And please try to call me before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. and we'll get you in there. Free reports, contact me by phone, 904-303-9061, and we'll get those to you. We'll send them to you right there as the email attachment. And this is for those of you who have never received this. This is very, very important information. It's vital for us to know this stuff, okay? Now, our segments that we'll run tonight will be over 30 minutes long each. We're going to run four of them. We're going to start off with part one and part two of your survival, and this is very important information. So be sure to pay close attention to what these gentlemen are going to be discussing this evening. I'm going to go ahead and start off with our first segment, and immediately after that, then we'll make a few announcements, and then we'll go on into the second part, okay?
From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Split show for you tonight. Later, Prophetic Visions. It's called 11 Days in May. Here's what's happening. A third person who contracted that deadly mouse-borne hantavirus that we've been talking about during a visit to Yosemite National Park in California has died of this disease as the number now of confirmed U.S. cases grows to 8. U.S. officials sounding a worldwide alert this week over this disease, and a park official has said that up to 10,000 people were thought to be at risk of contracting hantavirus, which is a pulmonary syndrome, from their stays in the park between June and August. Of the 8 U.S. visitors to Yosemite who contracted this disease, all but one fell ill after staying at the park's very popular Curry Village camping area. And now health officials in France are investigating 2 suspected hantavirus cases there of people who may have been exposed while at Yosemite. The creature knocked Lillian Peterson off her feet as she was climbing out of Lake Barcroft after a swim. The 83-year-old woman twisted around to see what attacked her. She noticed one thing: large orange teeth. A 35-pound, 24-inch rabid beaver had bitten her on the back of the leg and would not let go, sparking an ordeal that lasted more than 20 minutes. The woman and a friend battled the animal with canoe paddles, a stick, bare hands as it came at them, time and time again. Peterson was seriously injured. Authorities are now saying such attacks are exceedingly rare in suburban Washington. It was the first in Fairfax County in at least 12 years. The big question: what is causing these animals to go bonkers? Officials in Bermuda urging residents to prepare for the worst there. Hurricane Leslie heading toward the British territory, also bringing very powerful winds and rain, and also it's a Category 1 right now. It's being felt as far away as the U.S. East Coast. Nokia, Google are doing their very best to spoil next week's iPhone 5 announcement, touting new phones with features such as edge-to-edge screens, augmented reality, and spring-mounted cameras for steadier pictures. Lauren Weinstein with us, the expert on the Internet. This technology war continues to heat up. It's kind of exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, and especially now that we're sort of in the dog and pony show season. We have all these announcements that are coming out now in advance of what we assume will be called the iPhone 5. We don't actually officially, I think, know that it's called the iPhone 5, but probably it's a good bet. So we had today, we had Amazon announcing a bunch of new Kindle tablets, the Kindle Fire HD, all kinds of, you know, different versions, different specs, all of that. And as you were saying, we have in about a week the iPhone 5, probably named, so-named announcement. And then in October, there should be the, again, we don't know the official name, but it's being called the iPad Mini, which is like a 7.85-inch diagonal version of the iPad. You can spend hours looking at these specs and trying to compare the memory, yeah, cameras, and all this. I think you can kind of cut to the chase, though. What you're really looking at here is a choice of three different ecosystems: the Amazon ecosystem, the Apple ecosystem, and the Google ecosystem.
That's
and
right.
You get to choose which one you want to be in. So if you choose the Amazon ecosystem, you get tablets that put ads up for Amazon, because what they're really trying to do is get you to buy – Amazon
their products
and Amazon Books.
Sure.
It's a delivery platform. Apple is more involved in selling the hardware. Google is more involved in the different services they have, like email and search and all of that. So it's sort of which one you're going to be in, and I think from the standpoint of, I get asked a lot by people, which one should I buy?
Yeah.
And I say, really, it's don't worry so much about the memory and the speed and all of that. If it puts you in the place you want to be in terms of how you use these things, if you're an ebook reader or a Google Services reader or an Amazon movie watcher, that's the decision to make, because probably a year from now, 2 years from now, you're going to be looking at a whole new generation of these things anyway, and you're going to go through this all again. So why go completely crazy, right?
Well, Lauren, in 5 years from now, 10 years from now, what are we talking about technology-wise? I mean, what's left to create?
Well, you will recall that many, many years ago, the head of the patent office, right, in the U.S., was quoted as having said, we should close this office down because, this was way, way back, because there's nothing new to invent, right? So it's always, from where we stand, we try to imagine 5 years from now, 10 years from now. That's a bet I don't like to take, because all it's required is one new development, and all your previous, you know, estimates and guesses are thrown out the window. We know the internet will be faster for most people. We know that the computers will be faster, and there's going to be a lot more mobile. Mobile is where all the energy is really
That's
going
right.
now. But where it's really going to end up, anyone who wants to take that bet, good luck to them, because I'm not going to fall for that.
Okay, Lauren. Thank you so much. Lauren's website, part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. Okay, a long time ago in a far-off land, when you wanted to wash clothes, you just had one of your detergent buckets and you dumped it and off you went. Well, things have changed. They still have that. But now they're using these colorful little packets, right? You just take one packet, throw it in your washer, and that's it. What's happening with that? Toddlers around the country are using these handy single-use laundry detergent packets, thinking they are tasty treats. Folks, if you have kids, be very careful. Right now, almost 3,000 kids aged 5 and younger in the United States have swallowed these colorful packets, according to the American Association of Poison Control. That's a 13 cases a day since these things started getting reported. That's a lot. Be careful. Moderate exercise, regular intake of fish oil, right, keeps immobility at bay, according to a study. Findings of a recent trial show that women aged over 65 who received omega-3 fatty acids gained almost twice as much muscle strength following exercise than those taking olive oil. Astronaut Neil Armstrong, the first man on the moon, will be buried at sea. Armstrong died on August 25th following complications resulting from cardiovascular procedures. He was 82 years old. Wouldn't it be neat, though, if they just launched him to the moon? How traditional would that be? Up next, we're going to be talking about survival, your survival. James Rawls is next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. James Wesley Rawls has been a survivalist since his teenage years. He's now a survivalist author, lecturer, editor of the survivalblog.com, a former U.S. Army intelligence officer, held a top secret security clearance with a special background investigation and access to very sensitive compartmented information. Here he is back on Coast to Coast, author of Survivors, a novel of the coming collapse. James, how are you?
Just fine. Thanks for having me on.
Good. My pleasure, and I appreciate this. These are very interesting times these days. You know, you have looked at survival for a number of years. Would you say now, James, may be the most critical time in our career, in our lives, in our future?
I would say so. Things seem to be coming to a head economically, and it has me quite concerned. I believe that with the debt levels that the U.S. government has generated and with the mountains of consumer debt to match, we're at the cusp of a major change economically. I think we're very likely to see a stock market collapse. We're very likely to see a repudiation of the U.S. dollar, and that would be following a repudiation of U.S. treasuries by foreign investors.
What is propping things up now? I mean, today the stock market zoomed. Things just seem to be, you know, starting to, you know, plod along again. What's propping this up?
Well, it's all make-believe money. It's all money that's been created through what they euphemistically call quantitative easing, which is a form of monetization, where the government is basically buying its own debt. And that can't go on for too long before major inflation ensues. It's highly inflationary.
It reminds me of the old game with the pea under the walnut shells, and they just keep moving them around, and you're trying to find the pea under the walnut shell. How long can they keep this game going?
Well, quite some time, and in fact, I think we would have already seen a failure in confidence in the U.S. dollar if it weren't for the fact that the euro is in even worse shape, and the dollar is at least temporarily being seen as a safe haven.
Right.
So that can't go on forever, though. At some point, people are going to realize that our emperor has no clothes either. And at that point, the foreign investors are going to demand a higher rate of return on treasury paper, and that will be the key trigger to unravel the whole ball of wax.
But we don't know when that could come.
No, and it's more or less a psychological breaking point, because the debt levels that exist per capita and, you know, versus GDP are comparable on both sides of the Atlantic. So the fact that it took place in Europe before it took place here was more or less a psychological thing rather than a purely mathematical thing. So it's very difficult to determine when that breaking point will come with the U.S. dollar. But one thing is for certain, we're going to see that happen certainly within the next 10 years, probably within the next 2 years.
How long can people take this kind of pressure if they're unemployed, if they're losing houses, if things just aren't going their way? At what point do they start to do civil unrest things than they've been doing?
There'll be protests and riots, and eventually the riots will get out of hand. But we haven't even really seen real pain here in the United States.
No, we really
haven't. Like, if you look at what's going on in Greece right now, where they've instituted the so-called austerity measures, that's the real pain.
Unemployment up 24% in Greece.
Yeah, we haven't seen that here in the States yet. And when we do, that's where the revulsion point will come, and people will take to the streets and first start throwing epithets and later start throwing bricks.
Well, here, 47 million Americans on food stamps. What would have happened if those 47 million people did not have some kind of government assistance at this point? Would they be the ones?
Oh, I think we would have already had a revolution.
Yeah.
The one thing that frightens me is that if we ever had a solar storm or an EMP event, it could take down our telecommunication system. And food stamps are no longer printed food stamps.
Oh.
They're now EBT cards,
and
they're all handled by a centralized computer system. What will happen if we ever have some kind of electromagnetic hiccup that takes that system down, and suddenly everyone's EBT cards or SNAP cards are no longer valid?
They don't work. Well, also your ATMs.
We will have riots within hours.
Oh, my gosh. You know what? They'll be breaking down store windows to get at the goods.
Right. And in fact, there was a news story just yesterday or the day before about Greece, and where a bunch of trade unionists stormed a number of grocery stores in Athens, and they took over $3 million worth of merchandise in a organized looting spree, where they basically had all the union members come in with shopping carts, and they, you know, they tried to put a political face on it. They tried to make it look like a political movement because they're all carrying banners for their union.
Yeah.
But it was still looting by any other name.
Well, when people have to survive, whether it's to go and get medicine for your family or food for your family, people believe anything is justified in order to do that, don't they?
Yeah, they certainly do. In fact, the history of the 20th century, we saw repeats of that over and over again on many different continents, that psychology, once it gets started, is very difficult to stop. It's almost like the psychology that I refer to often when it comes to inflation. Once you start to have inflation, you start to have the expectation of future and increased inflation, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Well, once you have public protests about the cost of food or the availability of different goods or services, once those protests start, they'll continue and they'll grow to the point where even people who weren't even part of the movement originally get caught up in it. And the next thing you know, you have thousands and thousands of people in these organized events that are systematically looting.
At what point do we see specific signs, James, that would show us that this could happen?
Well, I think the key trigger will be a turn in interest rates. As I mentioned before, foreign creditors at some point are going to insist on a higher rate of return on American Treasury paper. When that happens, that's going to reset the prime rate here in the States.
And they're fighting that, aren't they? They don't want to do that.
They're dragging their feet tremendously. And one of the reasons we've seen this false prosperity is because of what's called ZIRP, which is the zero interest rate policy, which is absolutely unrealistic. It has no connection with reality whatsoever, but they're doing their best to jumpstart the economy by keeping interest rates at absurdly low levels.
But it hasn't jumpstarted. Not really.
They're barely keeping things afloat, even though you can get a home loan at around 3% right now for a 30-year mortgage.
Well, see, but the part of the problem is it's not the interest rate. It's having the income and the job to pay the payment.
Right. Yeah, they can put interest rates, you know, to zero, or even what in Japan what they call super zero, where they're effectively paying you to take the money. And if people have no jobs, it doesn't make any difference.
It won't have
any effect. At that point, they'll be pushing on a string.
This fourth quarter will be interesting in terms of retail. This is always supposed to be the biggest quarter of the year for retail establishments. I don't know, for example, how much the internet will bite into it, but it's going to be interesting. What does your gut tell you, James?
I think we're going to see a very weak Christmas buying season, and I also think that the recent blip in home sales is going to fall off again. There's just far too many foreclosures on the market that are putting a negative pressure on home prices. And it'll be years before all those foreclosures work their way through the system.
Well, in the uptake, I think, in home sales, the reason why they're up, I think people are buying them because they're bargains.
Oh, relatively, yes. But the problem is the supply side. There's a tremendous number of homes that are in the process of being foreclosed that the banks are reluctantly putting on the market. They're dragging their feet because it hurts their bottom line.
Right.
And there's what's a huge shadow inventory of foreclosed houses that are not even listed officially anywhere.
Will they sell them privately if you go up? Let's say they foreclosed on a $300,000 house.
Well, the thing is, it has to actually be fully foreclosed. The bankers are even delaying the foreclosure process itself because they don't want to build shadow inventory.
Are they letting people stay in these houses?
Yes. People are squatting in these houses. And in some cases, these are million-dollar houses that they're sitting in, and they're not paying a penny of interest or a penny of principal. All they're paying is their property taxes.
Why do they pay? Well, I guess you could sell the property at a property tax sale.
Right. They know that the bankers won't foreclose on them for months, but if they fail to pay their property taxes,
they're out.
They're out, yes, because the county will take the property and they'll.
Let me ask you about that, James, for a moment. And then in the next half hour, I want to talk about your tips on surviving because you're an expert at that. If somebody goes and buys the property tax bill at an auction, they get that house, right? What has happened to that mortgage that the house was supposed to be collateralized with?
Well, that depends on the jurisdiction that you're in. But in many cases, the bankers are the third guy in line. They're out of luck.
So why don't they buy the property tax? Why would they walk from the mortgage when they could just easily pay the property tax?
Well, because, as I mentioned before, the property owners, by and large, are wisely continuing to keep up their tax payment.
Well, let me ask you this. Can we assume that if they haven't paid the property tax, the chances are they're not paying their mortgage?
Oh, certainly.
Okay.
The mortgage is the first thing to go. A lot of times people are continuing to make, you know, their other payments. They're making their car payments but not making their house payments.
That's because they know they can stay there for as long as they think
they
can.
It's much easier to tow a car away.
Yeah, that is true. Stay with us, James. We're going to come back in a moment. James' website linked up at coasttocoastam.com, survivalblog.com, author of Survivors and also How to Survive the End of the World as We Know It. Let's talk about some survival tips when we come back, and then we'll keep him next hour for phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, James Wesley Rawls with us as we talk about survival and just to stay tough. James, how many people come up to you these days, or what are the responses on your survival blog that they truly believe there's some impending problem?
Oh, I'd say the majority at this point. It's obvious that we're nearing a trigger point, and it's not a matter of when, but when. It's a matter of timing. Well, it's difficult to predict because there's a lot of imponderables. There's a lot of variables. With the situation in Europe right now, we don't know how long that's going to play out and how it's going to play out, because that's temporarily boosting the dollar.
So the longer the European situation stays in a muck, the better off it is for us?
Yes, in effect. The dollar will actually strengthen slightly, and we'll continue to see foreign capital come into American markets. That's one of the things that's been running the Dow is foreign investment, because the European markets are not seen as safe any longer.
Does any economist have a clue? I mean, obviously the people who control the Federal Reserve are not stupid people. You know, Bernanke and those folks, they're very intelligent. We may not agree with what they do, but again, they're not stupid people. What are they trying to do to fix this?
They're not really doing anything.
No, they're just, they print,
they're
print more money.
They're perpetuating the system. They're trying to reinflate bubbles, even though the only proper thing to do is to let the economy run its course to unwind the volume of debt that's built up. That's a very painful process, and it's politically unacceptable. It's the sort of thing that actually topples governments. So they're taking what they see as the easy way out, which is attempting to reinflate, and they're not being very successful. In fact, at this point, deflation in the short term is winning out. They're pumping as much money as they can into the system, and it's getting sucked up by bankers who are parking it in cash equivalents right now for safety. They're not lending that money out.
If you've got a job, things are relatively okay for you. If you don't have a job, it's a mess. And I've never seen a situation, James, where we're in this continental divide where you've got those who have and those who have not.
Yes.
And it's getting, the gap's getting bigger.
The gap is definitely getting bigger. And the people, it's not just unemployment, it's also underemployment. There's a lot of people right now who have advanced college degrees who are doing very menial jobs just to make their rent payment and to put food on the table.
Well, you know, I was saying a few months ago that I think we had 200 broadcast graduates in my class at the University of Detroit, and I think only a couple of us got jobs in broadcasting. You know, all the rest went into other fields or got jobs in other things. They weren't able to get broadcasting jobs. I bet it's worse now.
Oh, it certainly is. And the volume of college debt that's been generated just in the last 10 years has been tremendous. People are tying their hopes on a college degree, and they're essentially making themselves debt slaves for the rest of their lives to pay off that college education. They're taking on huge loans. And my advice to any young people that are listening is, because the economy is weak, to basically put yourself on a six-year plan for college, work your way through college, and come out at the end debt-free. You'll thank yourself for
it. And pay as you go.
Yes. There aren't any jobs right now anyway, so it's better to work part-time jobs, pay your way through school, not take on any debt, and come out of the whole process debt-free.
My 18-year-old granddaughter just went to college in Missouri. She wants to be an environmental specialist. Might have a job when she graduates. But I'm sure that bill, which Grandpa's going to help, is going to be $40,000, $50,000, $60,000,
won't it? Yeah. Those are the times we're living in, George. It's a time of great uncertainty for a lot of people, and I think it's one reason my blog and other blogs like it have become so popular, and why novels like mine have become so popular, is people are recognizing the fragility of society, and they're taking the next logical step, which is to think, well, what do I need to do to prepare my family? What steps do I need to take to give myself a better chance of pulling through this? Because they can see that, you know, the edge of the cliff. They can see that doom is upon us as a nation.
Is this not a cycle, though?
Well, it is. It's a cycle for pretty much all nations. But what's unique this time is we're truly in a global economy with a tremendous amount of foreign trade and international finance that has really never existed. You know, there were parallels, say, in the 1930s, and the Depression of the 1930s is, of course, what triggered World War II. But now it's even more interconnected. It's what Ashley Brilliant calls intertwined. We've got a situation where a finance decision that's made in Japan or Germany can have huge ramifications here in the United States.
What would you tell a 25-year-old man or woman who has to pay $1,000 a month for an apartment, a car payment of $300, $400 a month, and, you know, expenses? What would you tell them if they had even somewhat of a job?
Well, I think people need to reorder their finances. They need to sit down, pray about it, and sit down with a yellow legal pad and work out a real budget and try to figure out what expenses they can truly do without. Do you really need to buy a $4 latte at Starbucks? Do you really need a giant plasma television? Do you really need a jet ski? People need to make some very tough decisions, because unless they reorder their finances now, pay down some of their debt, and get their house in order, literally, in terms of food storage, for example, unless they make those tough decisions now, when calamity does come, they're going to be completely underprepared. And if they go into this with a high debt level and 3 or 4 days' worth of food on the shelf, they could end up as statistics.
Well, that's true. Okay, so let's go through some of the specifics, James, that you might recommend that people do.
Well, I guess the absolute top of the list would be water filtration. I think it's very important for people to recognize that there's any number of situations that could cause an interruption in civic water supplies. And if the power grid goes down, all bets are off.
The water won't pump, will it?
Water won't pump, and even people that are on well water, unless they're on very shallow wells that can be hand-pumped, are going to be out of luck.
That's right.
So people need to have a water filter, because they may have to depend on water from runoff from their roofs. They ought to go ahead and set up diverter valves on their downspouts from their house and set up rain barrels. If you're living in a house that's that has an older roof on it. If it currently has a composition roof or a shake roof, I recommend that you switch to a metal roof, both for better fire protection and because you'll end up with water with just microscopic contaminants in it compared to a composition roof.
Of course, you might have water at the top of the list. You might have a city code problem there, right?
Well, or you might have a homeowners association problem if you live in an HOA that has CCNRs that are restrictive that say you need to have a shake roof.
Yeah.
Or you need or whatever. Actually, most CCNRs would prefer to see people upgrade from a composition roof to a metal roof. So it's not an issue in most places, but that's one of the things that I recommend. Water has got to be at the very top of the list, followed by food storage, mm-hmm. and then there's a whole panoply of things that you need to figure out. But anyone who wears prescription glasses should buy several sets of spare glasses. Anyone who currently wears contact lenses needs to buy several sets of traditional glasses. There's a company called Zenni Optical. It's Z-E-N-N-I. If you do a web search on Zenni Optical or Zenni Optical on the internet, they sell glasses for as low as $4 a pair.
I buy, I use readers, right? Because mm-hmm. I'm over 40 years old. And I have them everywhere. They're cheap. I don't care if I sit on them and crack them because I've got another one. But I've got them in my cars, in my house, in my offices, everywhere. I've got them in suitcases.
People should have distance lenses as well.
If anyone nearsighted should have
several sets of prescription glasses. And don't pay top dollar. Zenni is just one of several companies on the internet.
So what you're saying, if I hear you right, James, use your essentials that you use in your day-to-day living and inventory them and stock up on them.
Right. It's just a matter of, on food storage, start out with the staple foods you use on a regular basis and start doubling up and tripling up. And you want to, of course, get some long-term storage food as well and some foods that don't require any cooking whatsoever, things like MREs.
Right.
But it's just a matter of gradually stocking up on those staple supplies.
Well, here's the big question, though. How long do you stock up? I mean, because do we know if this is going to last a week, a month, years?
A lot longer than that. I would recommend that people stock up for as much as 3 years if they have the storage space.
3 years?
3 years, yes. Because you also have to consider that you're probably going to have family members, the ones that are currently teasing you for stocking up are going to be the ones on your doorstep the day after everything happens. They'll be there with their hat in their hand, looking very sheepish, saying, "Oh, well, you were right, and can you help me out?"
It's like a Twilight Zone movie.
Yeah, so you want to be able to help people. Charity is very important. So if you miscalculate and it only turns out to be a 6-month problem and you have a 3-year food supply, well, then you have enough food for 6 families for 6 months.
Now, is this plan based on an economic downfall or getting hit by some asteroid or the grid going down?
The great thing about food storage is it applies to all of the above.
Yes.
Food storage
and water
is crucial, whether it's EMP, whether it's a solar flare, whether it's an economic collapse, whether it's a pandemic. It doesn't matter. You're going to need food because any of those situations are going to cause a disruption in the chains of supply, and probably a disruption of the power grid. And if the grid goes down, again, all bets are off.
What's the name of the game? Survive? Live?
Oh, you want to survive and thrive. Because it's only the people that are well-prepared that are squared away and not worried about where they're going to get their next meal that are going to have their heads up and looking at the big picture who are going to be in a position to stand up and just say no if martial law is instituted. If people are worried about where they're going to get their very next meal, the last thing they're going to be thinking about is politics and restoration of constitutional government. But it's the people that are well prepared, who have that all squared away, who are going to be in a position to do the right thing.
Are we headed toward Mad Max? I remember Mel Gibson's first movie. I mean, this
situation. It could very well be a complete socioeconomic collapse. Odds are, if the power grid stays up, we'll muddle through. And
now, this is worldwide you're talking about, though, isn't
it? Yes.
Okay.
We could see a situation, a Mad Max type situation, if the power grids go down. If the grids are down, I don't think anyone is going to be able to maintain order. Even if martial law were declared, there certainly are not enough troops to even protect a small portion of the infrastructure, much less keep all the 18-wheelers rolling and all the trains rolling and all the, you know, power plants running and everything else. So, yes, that is the worst-case scenario. The power grid goes down and doesn't come back up. In fact, there's a new NBC drama television series that's airing starting, I think it's the 17th of September, called Revolution.
Yeah.
And that's the basic premise of the show.
That's right.
And I saw the pilot for the show, and it's a little bit cheesy, but...
Overdone?
Well, typical Hollywood,
of
you
course.
Know.
It's TV.
But it does get people thinking. And if you think through the ramifications of a grid collapse that goes on for years, they're really tremendous, because everyone with a chronic medical condition, everyone who is on a CPAP machine at night who has sleep apnea, anyone who has a implanted pacemaker.
If it happens in the wintertime, you freeze to death.
Yeah, there's going to be a massive die-off if the power grids go down.
Yeah, no, there's no question about it. How many people, James? Oh, go ahead.
Okay. I would predict that as much as 75% of the American population could perish.
Wow. How many people, if you polled, would say, what percent? Nah, I'm not going to worry about it. Yeah, I'm going to worry about it. I just don't know. What do you think?
Well, maybe 10% of the population has a full realization of what could happen.
If that.
But only 2% of the population is actively preparing.
Right.
Because the other 8% are in denial. They're like, oh, well, somehow the government will handle it, or we'll, you know, the economy will pull through, or the power grids will stay up, or whatever.
And they'll be in denial until something happens.
Right. And then they're going to be just another statistic, because they'll be just another unprepared family. What I'm hoping is that the listeners of Coast to Coast, who are very intelligent, well-read, articulate people, a much larger percentage of them are going to be listening to this and saying, okay, it's time to actually do something.
And I think many of them, James, probably have already started.
I think they have, a good portion of them. I've always been impressed by the listenership of Coast to Coast. They're definitely a cut above, and a much larger percentage of them are actively preparing.
Yes.
But my hope is that maybe half of the listeners now are going to go ahead and actively prepare, stock away the food, get the water filtration, buy the medical gear, communications equipment, firearms, and all the training that goes along with those,
mm-hmm.
so that they can become confident and competent and pass along those skills and help out other people.
It's like buying an insurance policy, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. I look at it as life assurance.
You may never have to use it. You may never tap into it. But when you do need it, you're sure glad you have it.
Right. And it also comes in handy even if you're just laid off from your work. If you have a one-year food supply, that's a very large portion of your budget that you don't have to worry about if you've got that food squared away.
We all hate auto insurance until we get hit.
Right.
You know what? And we say, thank God this car is insured. Simple as that. Wouldn't people go to your blog? Can they? Is it interactive, or do they
just? Well, yes. There's a search box there, and everything on my blog site is absolutely free of charge. There's no secret members area with a password or whatever. It's all there for free. The archives are very deep and very rich, and just about any topic on preparedness, they'll find some in-depth articles, whether it's food storage or communications or weapons or whatever. It's all there, free for the taking, and I highly recommend that people delve into the archives when they find appropriate articles that match their circumstances, that they do two things. First, that they put a copy on a memory stick, because the Internet is not forever.
It's true.
Power grids go down, they won't have access to it unless they have it on a stick and then can read it on their laptop. That's assuming they have a small photovoltaic power system at home. And print out hard copies of the most important articles and make a binder.
And keep them. James, we're going to take this break. We're going to come back and take an hour of phone calls with you as we talk about survivors and how to survive the end of the world as we know it.
Okay, Morris, that's the end of the first plug. Thank my guest has arrived, and we'll go ahead and open up the line so he can give us this information on the Morris Summit. Area code 706. Could you tell us who you are and where you're calling from?
Salam, Morris. This is Dalo Sakou, calling from Jacksonville right. Territory. What's going on, brother?
Hey, everything just fine, my brother. I've given a preliminary on the Morris Summit, and you're here, so I guess you can give us a further breakdown, a little bit more information on it, so that the Moors can have all the info on this thing. It's really, really great, great, and so let us have it.
Okay. First, man, I got to commend you, Tahaka. You're going hard in the paint, big brother. Seriously.
Thank you.
Have that information put out on a consistent basis is something that's just there that we have always needed, that we need to have. You got daily conference calls. We got the information being put out on a daily basis. All bases covered. I appreciate it, man. I appreciate you. I want you to know that.
Thank you, bro.
Second, the Moors, the Summit of the Moors is for Moors in Florida so that
okay.
we can operate as a commercial entity in economics. It's not a summit of people coming and dropping information, sounding deep and feeling good about yourself and going home. It is our Bilderberg for Florida, from the top mm-hmm. to the bottom. And we will have people who are somewhat of I guess we can call them experts in their field, but who are demonstrating what it is that we're gonna talk about dealing with economics and how to unify our economic efforts. One of the key things are we're looking for 99 people, which me, including me, will be 100. 100 more in Florida, January 11th through the 13th. Bring your business plan. Bring $500. What we're going to do is we're going to have established workshops from Friday through Sunday. And if we have a with the people with the business plans and ideas, if it's already working, if we want to vote on it, we'll put it to work. And what happens is you have a catalyst for the state of Florida. You have a pipeline. So if we want to take Dr. Phil's online university school and build that school and demonstrate it, duplicate it from Jacksonville, Orlando, Miami, D-Land, all the places at Fort Myers, everywhere from top to the bottom, we can do that. 100 people putting up $1,000 is $100,000. The
okay.
long-term goal is for 1,000 more putting up $1,000, which would create $1 million financing. So then what we could do is we can purchase the land, we can deal with the gold and silver, and deal with technology. They're the major things that we need. And when Brother Pleasant Bay jumps off, or whoever jumps off a true Moorish American government, the Commerce Department is already operating. This thing, this summit is totally free. I will have a hotel hosting our location. You have to pay for your room, everything to get down here. Nobody's a VIP, nobody's special. We all are getting together to create a 10-year plan, agenda for our children and for us, for our community. That's about it. You can call me at this number. Let me get this number for you real quick. You got that number, brother?
Yeah. It's all on 1 second.
Yeah, I have it in
okay,
my phone.
The number to call is area code 904-446-8345. That's 904-446-8345. You'll be speaking with Brother Dialo Sakur, and he can give you directions and all the other information involved in this summit that you need. Go ahead, brother.
So if you have something dealing with economics that you are already demonstrating as proven to work, call me. We can put you on. And that's it. We got five people lined up to do workshops right now. Then the next time we probably speak, brother, I'll give you the full layout.
Okay, my brother.
Thank you, Doc. I
appreciate
you.
You're welcome, man. Thank you,
Paul.
Peace. Peace. Okay, you heard it, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to be doing the do right here in Jacksonville, Florida. And for all the information and insight on that, you simply dial 904-446-8345. And you'll be talking to Brother Diallo Secure. And as I get more detailed information, I'll be able to assist my brother in getting this stuff out, too. I'll be there. Many other Moors will be right there. So we get a chance to meet those of you who are down in Florida. Have gotten a chance to meet. And for those of you who are in other cities, if you want to come on down and check this thing out, I'll get a chance to meet you, and we can get a chance to communicate with each other. Okay, I'm going into our second segment, and feel free to raise your hand. And if you got any questions or comments, we can go ahead and elaborate that. But before we do, I just want to make mention of the fact we are still offering our free articles, as usual, the 14th Amendment Exposed, as well as the Commerce Game. We've created one of the most comprehensive libraries in the Western Hemisphere, hands down, bar none. The way to access that is simply by contacting me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, at area code 904-303-9061, and we'll get you in there. And please contact me before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and so we can get that get you in line for that thing. Now, the next thing I want to say is that as far as your survival is concerned, there's some things that I've learned after many years of examining collapses in countries. One thing, and I'm going to go down into a little bit deeper detail, you'll discover that when an economy collapses, and especially when there's major disasters and stuff that take place, you have to understand that people who live in cities are in close proximity, they're domestic animals and stuff, and right on the outskirts of civilization, these animals have originally occupied the land where the people are originally living, and you discover, especially in an area where there are bears and moose and stuff of this nature, these animals have a tendency to come inward. So it is very, very important that you're able to defend yourself and your family and your property, and so you know what it takes to do that. But what you have to understand is if there is no food for man, there is no food for animal, and animal have no choice but to attack man for survival. And when there's no, if you don't have electricity, you're not prepared for survival, you don't have any survival skills, then it behooves you to make preparation today. Because all of the experts, and this guy, he's just one that come on today that I'm putting on here, but there are many, many, and I've listened to many over the years of my life that have given us the same story pretty much from different angles. But when this thing breaks down, there's a shortage. You have to remember that in any grocery store in any city inside the United States, if there's a run on that grocery store, there's only approximately, and I mean, this is really stretching it, about 72 hours worth of food inside that grocery store. And once these stores are empty, that's it. I mean, if you don't have something already stored up, if you haven't taken the time to prepare for this thing, and I mean, dig in for the long haul, then we will have a very, very serious problem at your house, because you discover that people who you thought was your friend and your loved one and stuff, they cannot afford to give you anything. Even if they do give you something, they can only do it once because they're going to have to go through the same thing that you have to. And also, with no water and we have unsanitary conditions, we have diseases and epidemics coming into play. And, of course, if the grid goes down, no electricity for the hospital, so therefore, you discover that they're boarded up, and you won't be able to get any support there. I'm going to go ahead on and go into the next segment, and it'll last approximately 37 minutes, so just stay tuned.
And we're talking with the survivalist, James Wesley Rawls. His website, survivalblog.com. This entire hour, we will take your phone calls with him. By the looks of things, the lines are almost all jammed. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. James, as we look at over the next 4 months as we get through election period here, what do you think is going to happen in terms of the economy?
Well, it's very difficult to predict, but I think that if the powers that be want to crash the economy, they could do so very easily. If they want to try to perpetuate the false prosperity, they might be able to pull it off. But unfortunately, I don't have a crystal ball. All I can say is people need to prepare. They need to be ready regardless of when this happens, because it's certainly going to happen within the next few years.
And if for some reason it doesn't happen, they're still not out of luck. I mean, they've got supplies that they can use.
Right. It's like money in the bank. And when inflation does return, people will really appreciate having squared away that food storage, for example, when the costs were relatively low. This last summer, we've seen the price of corn more than double. And for anyone that had cornmeal squared away or any other grain squared away, because it's also driven the price of all the other staple
commodities
up, sure. Yeah, like wheat and even rice have gone up correspondingly. Anyone who had their food storage in bulk squared away early is sitting pretty. It literally is better than money in the bank.
Well, that's true. Absolutely. What do you think about gold investing, putting it aside? We recommend it. What do you think?
I do after you have your other key logistics squared away.
Your essentials.
You got to get the essentials squared away. The beans, bullets, and Band-Aids have to have the priority. And then following that, I think silver is actually the better investment right now, because it's better for barter in a disaster situation. And it's also more likely to double than gold at this point.
Well, that's true, too. What about other nations? What happens to them?
Well, that's what I tried to show in my novel, Survivors, for example, and in my upcoming novel, Founders. I talk about that as well. That novel's coming out on the 25th of September.
Okay, great.
Overseas, we could see just as much calamity as here in the States. Now, some third world countries are quite accustomed to long-term power failures and to a more of a subsistence level of agriculture, more of a subsistence level economy. And their life might be able to carry on without too much degradation. The old saying is it's awfully easy to get along with what you've never had. And in some third world countries, that'll be the case. In Europe, however, in Australia, in much of Asia, where you have fairly high concentrations of population in the major cities, things are going to be just as bad in the States as in the States, if not worse.
Okay, let's take some calls here. Let's go, first of all, to Oceanside, California, west of the Rockies. Jack's with us. Jack, thanks for calling.
Yeah, I read an interesting book back in 1962 during the Cuban Missile Crisis. The title was Alas, Babylon. Mm-hmm. It was written in 1959 by Pat Frank, and it dealt with a small town in Florida that had to survive after a nuclear exchange between Russia and the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned barter. In a prolonged period of collapse, you're not going to have access to our electronic money, and money or even silver may not have much value. In this book, the things that had value were things of necessity, like food, water, a gallon of gasoline, a bottle of whiskey, ammunition. And I was wondering if you've given much thought in your survival guide to what things we might have on hand in form of barter that would have value during a crisis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's, in fact, at my website, if you click in the left-hand column, there's a link titled List of Lists. And one of the lists on there is a barter inventory list. And I go through a number of items that I think would be ideal barter currency. Things like common caliber ammunition is right near the top of my list.
because not only is it something that will be in great demand, but it's also something that's easily divisible. You can take a 50-round box of 22 long rifle cartridges and break that into a whole bunch of little transactions. So it makes an ideal barter item. Common caliber ammunition has got to be, again, at the top of the list. Other good items.
How much is too much?
Oh, there's no such thing as too much ammunition, because it's one of those barter items that you can trade for just about anything. Another really good item would be 1 gallon containers of kerosene, extra wick, wicking for kerosene lamps is another really good item. And another one that's often overlooked by people is two-cycle mixing oil for two-cycle engines such as those used on chainsaws. If everyone's going to be cutting their own firewood, we may have a situation where they can find gasoline and barter for gasoline, but they may not find two-cycle oil to mix that gasoline.
That's a good point.
Small bottles of two-cycle oil will be like gold.
Let's go to our Skype line. Nope, not ready yet. Let's go to Rick in Kansas City, Missouri. Rick, welcome to the show.
Wow. Hello, George. This is really a wonderful treat.
Super.
Oh, God, I've been listening for a while, tried to get through, and this is the first time I've been able to get through. And it's just a wonderful topic to listen to. And what I wanted to talk to or ask Mr. Rawls about, are you familiar with Howard Ruff and his predictions from the early 1980s?
Yeah, he was definitely premature in his predictions because
way ahead of the game.
At a national debt of $1 trillion as being absolutely unsustainable. He thought once we hit the $1 trillion national debt level that we would collapse. And now, of course, if you look at both the official debt and the unfunded liabilities that stretch out with all the pensions, we're looking at $160 trillion of liabilities, and the system has still not collapsed. Howard Ruff is or was a really prescient individual, and I have a lot of respect for his writings, but he was just way ahead of his time.
Okay, well, that's what I wanted to ask, because I read his book, I responded, and, you know, did some purchasing, kind of did some of the suggestions you're talking about now.
It's got a good newsletter, Rough Times, I think.
Yes, exactly, Rough Times, How to Prosper in the Coming Bad Years. And, you know, I did those things, and then gradually as I saw nothing was happening, I kind of felt a bit foolish and I felt a bit cheated. So here we are 30 years later and listening to you in a very similar kind of fashion. What's changed, and why should I consider your predictions more credible than Mr. Ruff's? You know, you see the predicament I'm in?
Well, the most important change is that we now live in a much more fragile society. We live in a society where the economy is all based on electronic transactions and where the chains of supply are tremendously long. All the parts that go in your car or even just, you know, the average piece of consumer electronics come from literally all over the world. The chains of supply are tremendously long. The interdependency between systems is much, much greater. And the level of technology that exists has, just on its own, made us more vulnerable to things like EMP and solar flares, because microcircuit gate dimensions have gotten smaller and smaller and smaller. 15 years ago, a typical gate dimension on a microcircuit was 3 or 4 microns. Well, 10 years ago, they went submicron, and now they're down to about 1/3 of a micron. And the smaller the gate dimensions are, the more vulnerable a chip is to even just static electricity, but much more vulnerable to EMP or solar flares. So the level of complexity and the technological sophistication of our society has made us much, much more vulnerable. 30 years ago, if we had an economic collapse, a lot of stores would have been able to keep on doing business, switching over to cash transactions.
They can't do that now.
They can't do that now because they literally cannot run their cash registers without power. And if you look at the architecture of modern stores, most stores are built with tilt-up slab architecture that are essentially windowless. So without electricity, they're going to be without light, without power, without air conditioning. They'll be dark, cold caves. There won't be any, or depending on the climate, dark, hot caves. There won't be any way to transact business.
Well, you know, they don't even, some of them don't even know how to subtract if you give them a $20 bill. They can't give you change.
They can't make change. That's right.
They don't know. Now, what about your job? What happens to your job if we have a problem? A grid goes down or something.
Well,
they can tell you not to show up or what?
Well, I think a lot of people will not show up, and that includes a lot of people who are in public service. Firemen, EMTs, paramedics, police officers. If the situation is truly worst case, a lot of those people are going to be more concerned about the safety of their own families, and they're going to want to stay home and protect them rather than show up for work. Another whole category of people who won't be showing up are people who work for utilities like water districts and for power companies and phone companies. So if we have any major disruption, they may not have the manpower to get the system back up.
Okay, back to the call. Skype line, Joplin, Missouri. Mike, take it away. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, Mr. Norrie. Hi, Mr. Rolls.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Mr. Rolls, I heard you on the show tonight, and I wanted to call in and thank you because you put me on the path, and I needed to be on to, you know, started putting back some food, gold, silver, ammunition, things that I might need. And, you know, my wife and I, we both were laid off and lost our jobs without our food storage. You know, my wife remarked just the other day, we wouldn't have made it through. We're both stable now, and we're back in our professions, and we're working.
Good.
But, you know, she mentioned, without that food storage, we wouldn't have made it.
That's so critical.
Congratulations. You're living proof that a well-rounded food storage program is the best insurance you can buy.
If, for some reason, certain regions of the country go down, but let's say Russia does not or China does not, do you anticipate some kind of an attack?
Well,
what a way to beat somebody,
if,
right?
If you look at economic turmoil, it does tend to lead toward major conflicts between countries. You know, if you stop making the payments on your car, they come and tow your car away.
That's right.
Well, if a government goes bankrupt, what are you going to call it? Kingdom towing? But that's essentially what wars are.
They figure the collateral is us.
Yeah. Well, in our case, it'll be not so much the people, but the people's labor. And I would also predict that if we had a major economic collapse and we defaulted on major debt overseas, that one of the ways they'd like to try to recoup their losses would be to literally crate up entire factories and ship them overseas. That's what happened at the end of World War II when the Soviet Union took over Eastern Europe. They took the best and brightest engineers and the most productive industries and crated them up and shipped them back to Mother Russia.
Well, they sure did. Let's go to Nehalem, Oregon. Nancy's with us on Coast to Coast on the Wild Card line. Hey, Nancy, go ahead. You with us? Yeah, let's hold on. She will be if I hit the right line. Hi, Nance.
Hi, great show tonight. Really appreciate the timing is immaculate. Hey, I had a question for Mr. Rawls. I'm in a coastal community, and everybody around here hunts, so ammunition isn't something that you know, people are looking for, I think even in a dearth of it. But I'm looking for something that would be durable and small and easy to use for barter when we're in a coastal community, a farming community, we need fresh foods, and I don't want something that people are going to start targeting us on for having accumulated a lot of. It needs to be something fairly low profile. Anything besides ammo, and if we have an EMP attack, of course, the machines aren't going to work, but any other ideas?
Well, if you were in an inland area, I would say salt, but being in a coastal area, salt won't be an issue. You can always... In a tide pool, you can, you know,
scoop it out of the water, let it dry out.
Yeah, you let it dry out, and or put it on sticks is what the Indians used to do. Is they'd put a whole bunch of reeds around a tide pool and have the salt accumulate. There's a number of other things you can do, but you'll be surprised, even in an area where everyone hunts, that your average hunter is basically a one box of cartridge a year kind of guy. So if everything hits the fan, suddenly they're not going to want just one box of ammunition. They're going to want a lot.
That's
because
right.
They're going to be thinking in terms of self-defense, not hunting. So ammunition will, even there, will be worth a lot in barter. The other things that you can salt away, at least in reasonable quantities, would be batteries. But you have to look at shelf life on those. But rechargeable batteries, a lot of those, especially the nickel metal hydride, the NIMH batteries, would be an excellent thing to salt away.
And, you know, a pack of batteries will last you, what, at least a year if you just use it in the, keep it in the carton?
Oh, well, a lot of them, if you look at the expiration dates on Duracells and Energizer batteries, a lot of those will have expiration dates around 2018, 2019.
Oh, they last that long. Super.
Yeah, a lot of them are designed to have a fairly long shelf life. Another thing that you might want to put away, if you're putting away rechargeable batteries, would be small solar chargers. Those will be in
critical.
Great demand. In great demand, yes.
Our dear friend C. Crane, they sell a solar observer radio with a solar panel. I mean, it runs on a hand crank, but you just put it out there and it powers itself up with a solar panel. That's pretty novel.
Yeah, if someone were sitting on a half a dozen of those, they could certainly name their price, because people are going to be desperate for information. And if the power grid's down and they run out of gas for their cars, they won't even have their car radios available. The car batteries will go dead.
Let's go to Jack in Minnesota, Wildcard Line. Hey, Jack, go ahead.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Good, Jack.
Mr. Rawls, it's a pleasure to speak with you. As an old fart, I'm curious. You talk about substantial foods. Well, I don't have a lot of money available. I'm on Social Security. I understand the ammunition thing in regards to barter, along with other things. And I am just old enough to be creative that I don't worry about the barter end, but it's the chow.
You can get affordable food now, storable, of course. You know, we've got Wise Food Storage. But it's out there if you look, isn't it, James?
Right, and you could literally buy food out of the field and do home canning. You can buy things like peas and lentils in bulk and salt them away yourself. You can buy 5-gallon food-grade buckets, or you can even get them free if you ask around. Go to bakeries and delicatessens, ask if they have any extra 5-gallon buckets. And you can store foods in bulk at incredibly low prices.
You sure can. Stay with us. We're going to come back and take final phone calls with you, James, right here on Coast to Coast AM. James' website, of course, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Those of you who are very interested in survival, go and get some great information there, and we shall be right back with more calls. Well, next hour, we will talk about subconscious potentials. Get ready for that, and when we come back with James Wesley Rawls, we'll take final phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM as we talk about survival. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie, of course, and our guest, James Wesley Rawls, and your phone calls as well. How did you get involved in this, James?
Well, I kind of grew up in the preparedness mindset. I came from a pioneer family that came out west by covered wagon in the 1850s. And I grew up in the city of Livermore, California, which is the home of what's now Lawrence Livermore Laboratories, the home of the nuclear bomb. And growing up around a bunch of physicist kids, we've definitely had a foretaste of what could happen. We were living in, I don't know, the shadow of nuclear war. So I kind of grew up with that mindset, and it definitely stuck.
It sure did. Final calls, Nelma in Pennellville, New York, east of the Rockies. Hey, Nelma.
Hey, George. Good music.
Thanks for calling. Sure thing.
I just don't understand, like, he says to put away food a year, two, 3 years. And some people, like, if they're laid off or unemployed, disabled, poor, live in apartments and stuff, I know it can be done, but for most of them, I think it'll be really hard. And it's like a lot of them I know, they can barely, like, you know, make it through the week.
No, sometimes. I understand.
Yeah, for even for people who are living paycheck to paycheck,
yeah.
There's a lot of things that you can do that cost hardly anything. For example, if you're just systematic about, even if you don't even have a home computer, going to the library and using a library computer and watching FreeCycle and Craigslist every day, you can pick up a lot of things that people are just going to plain throw away that would be very practical. For gardening, things like gardening tools, jars for canning, you can get hundreds of canning jars free for the taking if you just watch those kind of bulletin board systems like FreeCycle and Craigslist. As I mentioned before, you can stock up on food very inexpensively. And by buying in bulk, you can use those same bulk foods on a regular basis, a day-to-day basis. Instead of buying rice in one-pound sacks, if you buy rice in a 50-pound sack
save a lot.
You're gonna be buying it at basically one-third of the cost of buying it in the small packages. So with that money you save, you can put that extra food away in the form of storage. And, of course, there's always the dollars to sweat ratio. If you're willing to put in the effort, you can get things squared away very inexpensively or just plain free. If you grow your own food, you're only out the cost of the gardening seed. And if you get involved in the Seed Savers Exchange, you can literally get free seeds just for the price of postage stamps. They'll be mailed to you free if you get involved in a swap by saving non-hybrid seeds, heirloom seeds, and trade them with other folks. There's a lot of different things that people can do on very, very low budgets.
I wonder, though, let's get back to that question we talked about, James. How many people actually believe something could happen?
Well, it's only a small portion have that recognition. The important thing is if someone listening to this right now does have that recognition, they need to get out of their armchair and get busy. You need to not just stock up, but you need to learn traditional skills. You need to practice those skills. You need to get into shape physically, because a life without the power grid and without gasoline is going to be a very strenuous life. You need to be in top physical condition.
You should do that anyway.
Yeah, and by the same token, you should wean yourself of things like tobacco, alcohol, caffeine. You need to get off of them now, because the last thing you want is to be going through withdrawal at the same time you're undergoing the enormous stress of a major disaster. That's just one too many stresses that could, you know, just cause an absolute psychological collapse. So you need to wean yourself of those addictions now, and you need to train with what you have. I've often been quoted as saying that owning a gun doesn't make anyone a shooter any more than owning a surfboard makes someone a surfer. You need to practice. You need to train. If you don't have the skills to go along with those tools, they're useless.
Let's go to Leo in Albuquerque, New Mexico next. Hi, Leo. Go ahead.
Yes, gentlemen, thank you for taking
my
call. My question is, for example, in the event of an EMP attack,
mm-hmm.
Would a radio, for example, that's without batteries and, just stored with, that's not hooked up to the grid, would that survive?
Most likely it would. It's mainly going to be in radios that are plugged into wall current or that have an antenna attached that will be affected by EMP, because the power lines leading to your house and the power cord leading to your radio, in effect, become an unintentional antenna.
Right, and that's
for
what
EMP.
Gets fried.
That, yeah, and that's what will fry your radio equipment. If you keep your radios unplugged and their antennas disconnected, they'll probably be fine. You can take an extra step and wrap your radios in a couple of alternating layers of plastic and aluminum foil, and that will create what's called a Faraday shield around them. But that extra step probably won't even be necessary unless you're very close in a major EMP area. And if you're in that field strength of EMP, you're probably also in the blast radius of a nuclear weapon, and you'll have much bigger problems to worry about than your electronics not working.
James, do you think government is getting ready for exactly this?
Oh, they are.
Bringing
definitely.
Water, food, things
yeah,
like
if
that.
You, if you look at government purchasing, you've probably read all the recent articles about umpteen federal agencies that are stocking up on ammunition, even
yes.
the National Weather
Service. Social Security Administration.
Yeah. Huge orders for ammunition. There's substantial orders for foods being storage foods being placed right now. And I'm sure you've had a lot of guests on over the last few years that have talked about the fairly extensive underground bunker systems that have been developed, and not just places like, you know, NORAD in Colorado or Mount Weather. There's some fairly extensive systems that have been developed. In the Soviet Union, there's an entire mountain range that's been turned into a whole complex of bunkers. You can read about that in Wikipedia, for example. So, yes, governments are definitely planning ahead for this. I don't think they have any real conception of just how bad things could be just from an economic collapse, though.
No, I don't think so either. I don't think they want to know.
Thought through the full implications of a grid down situation. There won't be government if the grid goes down for several months.
Next up, we go to Priest River, Idaho. John's with us, first-time caller. Thanks, John. Go ahead.
Yeah, I moved from the Bay Area in 98. We've been prepping since then.
Good for you.
And we've got every caliber you need. I'm just thinking of a 338 Lapua for, you know, interdiction at a long range. But what I called is I got a diesel. I read one of your books. I like both your books. I'm going to get the next one. But I got a diesel Suburban, 6.5, same engine as in the Humvee, and runs on veg oil. I can also use PCBs, you know, from the power, the transformers on the power poles.
You can burn on, you can burn corn oil from the store,
yep.
cooking oil. You
Absolutely.
Can burn just about anything in that. Yes.
Yeah.
Really?
And straight
yep.
alcohol, too, in that particular engine. The neat thing about that, I can use veg oil, strain it, and then just put it in there, have heating pads, the bottom heat up, and it gets cold up here. But
yeah.
I'll tell you, a really fast, easy way to make a generator, you get an alternator. You get one of those stationary bikes with a big heavy wheel. You get a serpentine belt. You get a battery. There you go. You've got your a pedal generator.
You got to pedal away, but you can do it.
Yeah, but that, you know, I was down. I went 250 miles today on veg oil.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I love it.
That is amazing. How many? What's the mileage?
I've got a little hydrogen kit on there too, so I get about 25 miles a gallon.
Oh, that's pretty 70, good.
75. Yeah,
and if you're using scrounged cooking oil, your cost per mile
is free.
It's right in the middle of my price range.
Yeah, I really.
Good for you, John.
I noticed in one of your books you forgot to get a diesel, and the guys are coming from back east, and I'm like, oh yeah, I've been there, done that. I got a four-wheel drive diesel.
Yes, in addition to being able to use alternative fuels, I think if we are in a major economic crisis and there is any kind of central planning applied,
mm-hmm.
the refineries are going to be directed to have the highest priority on diesel because diesel is going to be needed to move trains and to move 18-wheel trucks.
And planes.
For JP4, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So diesel and JP4 are going to be at the top of the priority list, and we could literally see a situation where gasoline isn't available at gas stations, but diesel is.
That's why
I recommend that people diversify and that they have at least one gas vehicle and one diesel vehicle and one electric vehicle.
Yeah, I got a J20 Jeep pickup. But the thing is, it's a mindset, too. This whole prep thing, you've got to get your mind wrapped around it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the biggest thing. It's
like, yeah, the mindset is the crucial thing.
Yeah, people think we're, you know, a bunch of wing nuts. That's okay. We left the Bay Area. We're still fine.
Yeah, but you'll be the first one they go to when they need something.
Well, they do because we got food prepped, and I'm a mechanic, and I fix all kinds of stuff, airplanes, car, you name it, I've fixed it. And all the tractors around here, they come get me to fix their tractors. That's a source of diesel right there.
Well, you know, Jim, I hope to God we don't have to use these things, but you got to be ready.
Absolutely. I think it's prudent for people to prepare. If they see the need to prepare, they don't take halfway measures. Get as well equipped and well trained as you possibly can with the time that we have available. And you and your children will be thankful that you took those steps.
What is the shelf life of ammo?
Oh, if you have ammo in sealed cans, it could literally last 100 years or more.
Or safe?
I have shot just recently some World War I ammunition, and every round,
wow,
bang. So now you can also have ammunition that's poorly stored, that's sitting around paint fumes or in a high moisture
environment.
Or gets
moist, yeah.
Where only half the rounds go bang. So it's important that you store it properly. If you can't find military ammo cans, and they are getting fairly scarce, one thing that works quite well is you can get empty, brand-new paint cans, one-gallon paint cans, from any paint store, because they're the same cans that they use when someone custom orders paint, and they'll take it out of five-gallon containers and put it in these one-gallon cans. They're quite inexpensive, and they're airtight. So all you have to do is pour in the ammunition. You may have to take it out of its original boxes to make it fit properly in a round can, but pour in the ammunition, throw in a couple of silica gel packets, and pound that lid down just like you would if you're sealing up paint, and you have just as airtight a can as a military surplus ammo can.
Okay, let's go to Los Angeles. Jim's turn. Jim, thank you for holding. Go ahead.
Hey, I don't mean to sound callous about it, but I think a little bit of what you guys are doing is projecting your own humanity on something that's not going to have any anymore when this happens. Sorry. Out of breath, I've been working. But the long short of it is that I don't think, you can store beans, you can have ammo. Trading ammo, I think, is probably the dumbest thing in the world, only in that the minute you trade it, you're going to get shot with it and then get cleaned out. But I think the hardest part of this that nobody talks about is how to deal with that sweet family next door at day 10 that, their kids are starving to death and they're ready to cut your throat for a Snickers bar. Nobody talks about
We did mention the unrest, Jimmy, if this hits.
I think that people should be very circumspect about talking about their preparations. And if you do let on that you have anything stored, you should never let the full quantity be discussed. You should,
No, that's a good point. You don't want them to know how much you have.
Right. And that's why it's important to have containers to dispense things in smaller. If you start handing out 5 gallon plastic buckets of food, people are going to catch on very quickly that you have large quantities available. You want to basically decant your grains into smaller containers like quart jars or half gallon jars and hand them out that way. In charity is very important, and I don't think that people should neglect charity, but people should, by the same token, be very quiet about their preparations. And when they do hand things out, it should probably be done at arm's length and preferably through an intermediary. I'm a Christian, and I like the concept of handing out charity through my local church. Deal with your church elders, not with your neighbors, so that they know what you have, but your neighbors will be the beneficiary of what you have and not even know that you have it. It's important that also from a biblical standpoint, the right hand isn't to know what the left hand is doing anyway. That way you won't be prideful of dispensing charity, and no one will feel personally beholden to you if they don't know where it came from.
It will be interesting times, James.
Yes, I think we are cursed to interesting times, and people need to be ready to hunker down. They need to team up with like-minded people, and they have to be prayerful. You need to get right with God first and pray that you will be in the right place at the right time with the right people, because unless we can count on divine providence, I don't think we're going to get through this.
Let's go to Boise, Idaho. Max, it's your turn. Go ahead, Max.
Hey, Jim, great show tonight. I got a rather unusual question. I got laid off about a year ago, and I got way behind on my credit cards, and I'm trying to fight for my life to pay them, not getting anywhere with them, and my credit's already been pretty much decimated. I'm renting. I don't own anything. My car's paid off, and I'm contemplating just instead of trying to salvage this thing and pay these cards and they're not going down or anything, and just putting the money into food storage and stuff like that. You recommend that, or should I fight for my life to pay off?
Well, I think at this point you probably ought to go through bankruptcy. A lot of the bankruptcy protections have gone away, but there's still some very important ones that exist.
Right, but they have made it a little more favorable to the creditor these days.
Yes, they have. I do recommend that if you're that deep in debt, that you cut your losses and go ahead and declare bankruptcy. And the way the bankruptcy law is written, if you're using your vehicle as a if it's essential to earning a living, and if you live in a lightly populated area, it pretty much has to be because everyone has to commute by vehicle. There aren't bus systems, and it's too far to ride a bike to get to most jobs in rural areas. So they're not going to take your car away under current bankruptcy law. So in your case, I think it's probably best to go ahead and declare bankruptcy and press on.
Well, sooner than later, my friend, I think. What do you think?
I think that we're definitely going to see some severe...
A lot of signs out there.
...traumatic economic times here in the very near future, possibly as soon as this fall. Things don't look good. If you look at what's going on in Europe and you extrapolate from there, and if you look at their debt level versus ours, it's not that much of a different situation. The only country really that's even worse would be Japan. They have huge debts there, but it's not very well publicized.
Well, we shall see what unfolds. James, I want to thank you for being with us for these couple hours. Very important subject. Up next, we are going to be talking about 11 days in May. What does that mean? Stick around as we talk about subconscious potentials.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our plugs on the survival. So I want to say that there may be some of you who may come along later and listen to this broadcast. If you got food stamps, what I would suggest you do if you would examine your budget and go ahead and start gathering up some food stuff, count your family members, make sure that you put enough, and you want to think about the long-term effects of what was spoken about this evening. And this isn't the first time this information has been broadcast. I've been studying this thing for the past 30 years, and but now as we get move closer to the close of this age, the reality is sinking in. Plus the facts of what the prophets have already told us in regards to the times coming. So, therefore, it behooves you to protect yourself and protect your family, arrange your priorities properly. And just like the guy said at the outset, we're going to have to start thinking about our priorities. I mean, we're gonna, you know, do I really need this new car? Versus stockpiling my water. Do I really need this new outfit, getting my nails done, getting my hair done on a regular basis? I'm going to have to eventually greatly prepare to reduce our standard of living, curb our lifestyles, and start putting some things aside. Go ahead and store it up. I mean, you look at your family members, and if you heard this and they didn't, the ball is in your court. So therefore, go ahead and make what necessary preparations you have and do what you got to do to prepare for the coming economic collapse. I'm going to go into the final segment. We got 25 minutes left. We won't get a chance to hear all of this. want to deal with something else here, and I put this as a just in case, very, very important information as well. So we're going to go in there.
Isn't it strange, the hippies, they failed and became the establishment that they loathed. Probably should have hit the bong a few less times. That way you could have gotten there quicker, right? All right, we're going to come back. What is it? Is there a conspiracy behind every Bush? Yeah, maybe. We're going to talk about that with Brad Steiger when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Brad Steiger, welcome back to Coast AM. Good evening to you.
Thank you, John.
50 years.
This evening, I think,
well,
your guest last hour, I think, set up some very good situations for our discussion. You're kind of, and I can't resist when you say there's a conspiracy behind every Bush. You weren't referring to Herbert Walker and George, were you?
I'll never tell. Maybe I'll get another post out of it, you know?
Yeah. Good, good. I loved your comments about the hippies. I was just thinking when you said that. In the 70s, 60s, as you might guess, the paranormal writing that I did, I was invited to speak at many communes. And recently I was at giving a lecture. And I looked in the back, and there was this couple of guys in a three-piece suit. The gal was dressed to the nines, and I thought, they looked familiar to me. And up they came, now prosperous business people, and they had probably one of the largest communes on the East Coast. And it's interesting to me how we slide into different roles and perspectives. Now, I would guess that they probably have a more liberal attitude, a more progressive attitude than some of their friends who stay, went right into business or right into other realms of perhaps seemingly more productive thought. But there's creativity that came from that movement too, that it now is being channeled, I think, in very constructive ways. So, you know, we could never, and I know I can tell by listening to you that you aren't the person who passes judgment. Sherry and I do not either. But we cannot really judge a movement when it is happening. You know, it takes perspective.
Yes.
That's what we tried to do with this book. We don't have an agenda, John, as you can tell by looking through it and reading parts of it. This is really an encyclopedic approach, being objective, and we had an editor who was honest. If we showed the slightest emphasis or, yeah, we kind of agree, just the facts. And this came from, you know, just years of journalistic writing and being a history buff. And Sherry's also been a very interested observer of the contemporary scene. And it's just fascinating to us to put these things down in as objective manner as possible and still have people saying, you know, we're in favor of this or favor of that. Likewise, politically, we're independents. We always have been. I've decided in fourth grade that I was going to be an independent, and I've stuck by that political gun ever since.
So what happened, just socially speaking, what do you think happened? Why did everybody change uniforms? And where are all these conspiracies coming from? Is it the ongoing division and then subdivision of all these different groups? Is that what is generating all of these things?
Well, unfortunately, conspiracies are so popular and so prolix now because of a general distrust of our government. And, you know, it pains one to say that. Someone who grew up in World War II and we totally believed our government never lied to us and we took our dimes to school every day so we could buy war bonds and stamps and they passed the little ice cream container during the movies so we all put our dimes in quarters. We were all involved in this effort. Now, it appears since Vietnam, you mentioned earlier, on the last segment, and the fall of the Soviet Empire, 1991, and that era. And then that began the great distress. Our government lies to us. When I grew up in the 40s, that was inconceivable. You know, we learned later there are perhaps some very major lies, but at the time we didn't. Our government, right or wrong, we were behind it. With Vietnam, the country began to split, and it really hasn't grown back together. The divisiveness that we see now, again, the fact, the labels you were talking about. I mean, is there anything so dismaying in a republic such as we have, where we give people labels and judge everything they say by the label we award them, whether they recognize that or not? So with the Vietnam War, followed up then a decade ago by a government, whatever side you're on this, whether you say it was misunderstood by the intelligence and that the man, Saddam, really did have weapons of mass destruction, or that was a lie, depending on your point of view. We won't take any point of view now except to say that the great mass of our government, our country, said once again, our government has lied to us at the expense of our young men and women, whom we owe so much, a debt for their service. But we like to see the service applied when we put, and I'm putting quotes around this, when we think a war is just, or we think that we are defending our cherished beliefs, not when we are deceived. So this followed Vietnam, where we found out that Bay of Tonkin never really happened. It was just a big PR push of the government to get us into the war. And then the terror and the confusion, our young men going over. And I've worked, both Sherry and I, in our capacity as guidance counselors, have worked with individuals who suffered the horrors of that battle, who, when they hear anything they think is a helicopter, they just dive for the ground, the scar that it left on. And then coming home thinking, boy, I remember when Dad and Grandpa came home, they had a big parade. They met, you know, with rotten eggs and being spat upon. So the confusion, it has separated our country, and it is growing wider, and we see that divisiveness and conspiracies then just naturally spring up because we're saying, wait now, we fell for this before. We're not going to fall for anything the government tells us, some people say. And we have to remember in conspiracy theories, conspiracists believe that everything is connected, nothing happens by accident, and that there's some kind of order in the world, even if that order is evil.
That's very interesting. You know, I was thinking that, I suspect you're a little, well, yeah, I know you are. You were saying you were, so you were a child in World War II, yeah?
I was a child, yes. I remember sitting around the radio listening to Pearl Harbor.
Oh, yeah, and as I've reminded the audience several times, my dad was there. He hadn't been 21 for even 3 months.
Oh, good.
When he was on the USS Maryland.
Oh,
but anyway, you know, the whole JFK thing, I remember people seemed to sense, now I was a child, I was where you were in World War II, and people seemed to sense but dare not say what they thought. Did you get the feeling that I thought John Kennedy's assassination broke the heart of the country, and I think everybody looked at it as just, this is just a little bit odd. I don't think anybody really bought the official story, but
no,
because they sensed it was not the straight story. And I kind of think things went down from there. I think that's where the real distrust of the government started. And then Vietnam, boy, then it really got rolling.
Yeah, it really got rolling.
But did that seem, did you at the time think that was sort of, look kind of funny? Or did you buy the official story?
John, I was in a unique position when that occurred. I was teaching in college.
Excellent.
And I was going up the stairs to my class, and a young man, a very, very nice student, but he was kind of the class joker. And he came running up to me and said, "Kennedy just got killed, President Kennedy." And I said, "That is tasteless. That is, no." I said, "Don't you dare go in the class." He said, "But it's true. It really happened." And then, of course, the announcement came on the PA system and class was dismissed. But you're absolutely right. I saw what happened to those college students. And they, as you say, they were the, and I have so many of them with whom I still correspond, who left then for Nam. And, you know, some came back in really bad shape. And I literally do weep when I think of those dear faces and marvelous personalities being ripped apart. Again, what happened then with the protests? What happened with the whole order and structure of college? The whole situation, the whole apparatus just became uprooted. And everyone, what we saw was this attitude of cynicism and doubt begin to bloom as it never had, I think, before in American society. Now, we should point out that we as a nation have been isolationists. World War One, we didn't want to enter the war. In fact, we didn't even call it an army. We called it an expeditionary force.
That's right.
Well, people who wanted to fight went through Canada, then to England, before our country entered. The same thing happened in World War II. We, as a Congress, we didn't even vote to help the refugees. We didn't even do anything when we were asked to help those when we word began to leak out of what those recreational and rest camps really were. We still refused to get involved, which is why a great conspiracy that began then and is still very much alive today is that FDR allowed Pearl Harbor to take place to get us into World War II, because we weren't going to. I mean, we have to recognize, you know, we are indeed a nation of immigrants. And a lot of us, I mean, my grandfather was a professional soldier in Denmark, you know, and they came over here because they were tired of all the wars in Europe. So let them handle. They can't get along. They're always squabbling over some stupid boundary line. Let them have at it. And then, of course, we have some of our great, you know, people don't like to see this, you know, but Henry Ford and several of our greatest entrepreneurs and manufacturers approved of Hitler. I mean, Ford even got an award from Adolf Hitler for his cooperation during the war. We have that in the conspiracy books. Some people don't like to recognize these things. They are uncomfortable. We have the senior Bush really entering the war because of the embarrassment that it was his family that was providing oil for the Nazis in World War II. So he entered to kind of, you know, be the sacrificial goat, sacrificial lamb. I'm making up for what my family has done. And he became a courageous and perhaps one of our best prepared presidents in terms of experience that we've ever had. All these things began at that time because we basically didn't want to get involved with what was going to Europe. So again, conspiracies really began to snowball after the Cold War, because we suffered through the First World War, and then we found ourselves in Korea, and then, you know, the whole idea, the French gave up on Vietnam, so we better go over there. And people just said, you know, this is enough. This is enough. And that's why conspiracies today, as I say, whether there's evil behind it or not, some of the conspiracists say, it is, there's always a reason for what's happening, even if it's a very bad reason.
Well,
Where shall we begin? Can we talk about your book at all?
Oh, please. And by the way, I didn't mean to give an oration there. You just
Please do. Listen, I'm taking in every word, and I know a lot of people are out there, all 560 stations, I think, so that's good. This is an amazing piece of work. It's hundreds and hundreds of pages. You've covered absolutely everything in here. This really is the complete dossier.
Thank you. Thank you, John. We certainly tried. It was really, people ask me, how long does it take to write a book? Well, it depends, and I'm not being just a smart guy when I say this book began when I was 7 or 8 years old. I came from a family where every Sunday we would gather and uncles and aunts would have intense political discussions. And as I said, that's when I made up my mind that I wasn't going to go with any party. I was just going to be the listener. I was going to be the objective student of this. And I saw then what was happening with FDR. We had people come to the church who were Koreans and said that they were Korean agents who warned Roosevelt. You had all this information, and then I would look at FDR and see what he was leading the nation to seem to be courageously. So I asked myself that far back, what is true? What is false? So it began for me that long ago, and it was intensified when I read an article in the great old magazine, True, the men's magazine. I think it was by Daniel Mannix, and was entitled "The World or America's Greatest Unsolved Mystery." Now, Dad had a subscription to that. That was a men's magazine. It wasn't Playboy. I think the most racy picture they had in it was probably a girl in a full-piece swimming suit, if they even had that.
Yep.
But there was that article on the world or America's Greatest Unsolved Mystery. And it was about Lincoln's assassination. And I said, what do you mean, mystery? I just read in the history, John Wilkes Book, that there's no mystery. Reading that article and seeing all the theories and calling it the mystery that we would be discussing for 100 years, well, they were right, because I read that in, you know, the 1940s. We're still discussing, and we're still having books come out on Lincoln's assassination. Two movies this year coming out on Lincoln dealing with the assassination. We will be talking about JFK for at least as long, and 9-1-1 we'll be discussing for millennia.
All right. Well, just give us a little teaser, because we're going to have to take a hard break here in a minute, but what, in your opinion, is the top three most popular conspiracies that we can get into when we come back?
Oh, I think probably what upsets me most is some of the secret experiments that our government has done, and such instrumentation as HAARP, H-A-R-P, that might have caused Fukushima and Katrina and what we're dealing with now. And then one thing that really is upsetting is our government using digital and electronic instruments to spy on us?
That's a pretty good setup, Mr. Steiger. Brad Steiger, our guest tonight for the Saturday night edition of Coast to Coast AM. Get yourself a proper cup of tea and come back soon. So what about that? What are some of these secret experiments of the U.S. government being conducted against us? Chemtrails, massive dosages of LSD back in the old days, Tuskegee experiments, things like that. Nice. Ask any Native American if he trusts the government. We'll be back with Brad Steiger in just a moment. This is Coast to Coast AM. Brad Steiger is our guest tonight. He was on a little over a year ago, and 50 years of just paranormal experience and everything that goes along with that. And we may have to refer to him or title him Steiger the Cynic. I mean, you're not suggesting that our government would experiment on us, its beloved citizens, whom they defend and protect, would you?
Oh, I wish I didn't have to.
Yeah, me too. Well, look, I can laugh or I can cry, so I can make levity and light whenever I can, but it ain't easy sometimes.
Now, remember, I grew up in the 40s, and it was our nation, right or wrong, and I still like to believe that.
Me too.
And some of these things, let's be gentle and say
yes.
Some of the things are not due to guile, but stupidity. In 1950, when nuclear weapons were still in their infancy, the DOD, Department of Defense, detonated nuclear devices in several desert areas, then monitored unsuspecting civilians in cities downwind to see if any medical problems and to see how the mortality rates changed, using citizens unknowingly as experiments. Now, we know in one of those experiments, people of some celebrity perished because of it. John Wayne, Susan Hayward, and a number of other prominent actors. They were making the Genghis Khan movie up in the hills, and they felt the blast. And they said, and they have in their notes, and people who were on rest of the crew in the film, so they just stood there and felt the warm wind from the
blast. Oh, no.
Well, get this. I have a very good friend who is with Stars and Stripes in World War II, and he was one of the first to walk through Hiroshima after, you know, the war had ended.
Yes.
The only protection he had was a pair of overshoes. Nothing. No suit of any kind, no protective hazmat suit of any kind, because we didn't know. We didn't know radiation. I mean, these are people who should know. But it goes on.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to have to end this segment. Very, very interesting information, and it goes into great detail about things that has occurred in the past inside the United States that the government has not come forward and let us know about. I would like to come back at a future date and run this thing in its entirety, both plugs, approximately an hour, so you can get a clear and concise understanding of some events that we haven't put on this broadcast in the past, so that would give you some insight to what has happened then that we can give us a clear understanding of what's going on inside the country today. I want to say I thank you all for listening in. And for those of you who want to get a hold of my articles, my free articles, or those of you who want to access my library, just contact me at area code 904-303-9061. And don't forget the brother Diallo Secure has already gave us information about the coming Morris Summit here in the state of Florida. That will be from January 11th through the 13th. It's absolutely free. You can contact him for more information at area code 904-446-8345. Also, right here in the city of Jacksonville, Florida, I will be doing a public speaking engagement on the 14th. We'll be be right down the street at Al Salam's Masjid, and we'll be discussing your World Citizens agenda and these things, and also relationships between male and female. So contact me for that information at area code 904-303-9061. I certainly thank you all for listening in, and we'll be coming back in the near future with another broadcast involving some very, very vital information. I've been your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, and tonight I'm going to say good night, and I thank you all for listening in. Thank you.